Welcome to Safe Strength. My name is Tom Seaborn. I'd like to start off by reading a quote from Tudor Bamba. Scientific research cannot support the novel systems that pop up in magazines and on the internet at the astounding rate. You will do well to ignore fads and follow well-tested approaches validated both by research and in competition. Well, because on the internet now, gosh, there are so many different, quote, training techniques and people don't know what to do. And Safe Strength, we're here to talk about injury prevention, but we're not medical doctors, or probably not medical doctors, and so we have to stay within our scope of practice. So we'll talk a little bit about preventing injuries and how to look at our clients maybe in a more holistic way. Well, the aesthetics of bodybuilding, which, you know, kind of like isolated body parts like biceps and glutes, you know, training like that, doesn't necessarily help the functioning athlete, meaning isolating body parts may not help a person hit a baseball better. So the baseball athlete would do better by doing more powerlifting type techniques, which involve multi-joint full body training. And, you know, early in, like in the 60s, Universal machines and Nautilus machines were there to isolate the muscles, and so that's what people got used to. And then, with all the new CrossFit programs emphasizing more of the powerlifting, we're kind of going in cycles like the old days of powerlifting. So when we look at cosmetics versus function, there's kind of a laboratory movement versus a real move. There's an artificial move versus a natural move. There's a rigid structure versus flexible. There's isolating muscles versus integration. There's no gravity versus gravity. There's no proprioception, which means balance, versus balance. And then there's a link-like type progression versus chain-like. So again, cosmetics is more, and I don't want to say dangerous, but since it's maybe not real-world functional, it can sometimes cause damage in the long run. So we just have to kind of watch for that. And that's where we decided to train movements instead of muscles. So kind of mimicking the movement. Now, as we talked about in other lectures, you don't want to mimic the movement exactly, but if, you know, we're training for sport performance, you want to get something close to that movement and then be able to kind of recreate the strength surrounding it. So let's talk about like a one rep and just talk about what happens during a rep. First, you load and then you unload the muscle. You stretch and then it shortens. You absorb and propel. You accelerate and decelerate. It's a concentric and an eccentric, and it's a supinated and pronated movement. So, you know, when we think of what's going on, there's a lot going on with one repetition. And we want to have our client experience hypertrophy in the weight room, so muscle size and maximum strength and eventually muscle definition, and then they kind of transition into their next series. So this is called periodization, and periodization simply means training muscles in a pattern so that you'll arrive at a goal, maybe in what's called a mesocycle, like in a month you'll be able to reach the specific goal that you had, and then you'll be able to train in different cycles depending on what your goals are. And during the workout, this is, again, for a safe workout, do the more complex moves before the basic moves. In other words, you know, do the warm-up first, then like a rotational move before a linear move, an integrated move before a basic move, and kind of an internal before an external, and again, like we talked about power, a power move before endurance. That's the safe way to do it. Over time, you'll progress from easy to hard, simple to complex, body weight first and then external weight, and then stable before unstable. You know, simply, before doing squats with a 45-pound bar, use a broom and make sure that she's squatting correctly. You know, hips are back, maintaining a perfect pelvic tilt, neutral spine. Watch as she descends that she doesn't change into a posterior pelvic tilt, which, by the way, I see all the time, especially when people try to go a little bit too low in their training. So anyway, properly, you know, accomplished resistance training produces concentric force, which is, you know, we know what concentric is. So that's when the muscle shortens. There's an isometric stabilization. So at the top of the movement, there's isometrics where there's no movement. And then there's the eccentric where the muscle is lengthening. And then there's a kind of a decelerating force at the end range of motion, which slows it to a stop. So there's all kinds of stuff going on in each rep. And, you know, we have to watch for things like during a movement, let's say a biceps curl, and he's trying to lift more than he should, so he's cheating by doing a postural sway. And that causes, problems with the lower back. And so, again, form is everything. First form, and not it's not about how much weight. Well, you'll see in your presentation there, it says pick up a chair when no one's watching. If you see a chair and no one's watching, you're just going to pick it up. You're a personal trainer, and you bend over from your back and you pick it up incorrectly. And you do that often enough, and you could possibly have an issue. And that's why we want to lift with our legs. And you know, it's kind of a cliche, but we're role models for our clients, so we try to make it a habit to lift correctly, keeping the spine neutral when we're just even picking dumbbells off the floor. And we talked about the Golgi tendon organ in another lecture, and what that means is, whenever your client is trying to lift very heavy, and the Golgi tendon organ senses the amount of stretch and the contraction of the muscle, and when it becomes so great, this organ, it's actually between the muscle and tendon. What it does is it causes the muscle to relax, again protecting the muscle. But when you relax the muscle, you could drop the weight on who's ever, you know, spotting you or whatever. So beware that your client is not always attempting to lift to failure on every set and rep that they're doing. The Valsalva maneuver, this is associated with breath holding, and it plays a vital role in the intra-abdominal pressure to support and stabilize the lumbar spine during heavy lifting. And what I mean by that is you'll see power lifters and even some bodybuilders holding their breath during the lift to enable them to get more weight. And in doing so, it's stabilizing their spine. So, you know, off the record, this is what competitors do. And think of it this way. You can train for health, fitness, or performance. And athletes who are training for performance, they're not worried about, you know, oh, how is this going to hurt my health? They just want to get that weight up, and they'll find a way to do it. So they will hold their breath to maximize their lift. And as you know, you want to teach proper breathing, exhaling on the exertion. But admittedly, when you're working with high-level athletes, you know, they're going to do what gets that weight up, which may mean holding their breath. It's not like you're going to advise such an activity, but you have to realize that it's there and that it's going on. And, you know, there's all kinds of different strength training modalities. It's not just bars and machines. There's, you know, you can use body weight, tubing. You can use AirX Max for balance, foam rolls in order to kind of roll out the tense muscles, you know, body blades, cables, you know, the different cable machines, stability balls, medicine balls, bands, free weights, DynaDisc, dumbbells, focus mitts. I mean, there's so many ways that we can motivate our clients, and it's just learning how to use these different modalities. So remember what we've talked about in previous lectures. You've got to train your muscles in balance. Make sure your client trains the quads and hamstrings to prevent knee injuries. And for flexibility, here's a very important point regarding strength. Let's say your client is stretching her hamstrings, but she doesn't have the strength in the antagonist muscle, which is the quad, to get the hamstrings into the great range of motion that she's looking for. For example, let's say she's lifting her leg up off the floor and she can only get it knee height because the strength of her quads aren't allowing her to lift it any greater. Well, the research shows that it's probably better not to have someone just crank that leg up over her head for her if she doesn't have the strength in the antagonist to do it herself. So be aware of the strength-flexibility relationship, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that as we move along today. Because remember, today is not just about weight training, it's probably more about injury prevention. For example, you know, a throwing motion or a serving motion, they're very similar, a serve in tennis and in volleyball or tennis, and a throwing motion like an overhand throw in baseball, you know, there could be a problem with an elbow, but it might be stemming from a shoulder problem which came from an abdominal weakness. And thinking about the fact that your abdominals, it's like a power chain, and we call it a Serapi effect when it comes to throwing, to create that whip action. So you have to have a strong core to prevent damage to the appendages, such as the arms and legs. The core is where all of your action starts. And on that note, think about how far of a range of motion your client is looking for. And by this I mean, the greatest range of motion to produce the best muscular hypertrophy, meaning to make the muscles larger, is to stretch the muscle on the eccentric, meaning on the lengthening phase, to 1.2 times resting length. So that's not like your crazy stretch, but just a little bit beyond resting length of the muscle in order to get the maximum actin and myosin contraction, meaning to get the muscle to contract fully. And what we'll see when we look at people, when we look at our clients, you know, they walk in and they want to be trained by you, but they have round shoulders, they have a pelvic tilt, maybe they have no transverse abdominis, you know, in other words, they don't know how to hold their abdominal muscles in. They have strong muscles maybe, but their weak muscles are being compensated for by the strong ones. And again, we'll talk about that in a moment as well. But for example, I was speaking about squats. I saw one of the students this morning doing squats, and she was going to do rock. She was just adamant about doing rock bottom squats, and she wasn't in my class, and so she was doing these, and so she was going all the way down, you know, to the point where her knees were flexed fully, you know, just like you see the Asians in Japan sitting on street corners with their butt on their heels. But each repetition of squats, she went from a correct neutral spine with a slight anterior pelvic tilt to blasting into a posterior pelvic tilt, which you could see the possible damage she might be doing over time. And I mentioned it to her, but she kind of rolled her eyes. So, you know, there's some people that won't change no matter what, because they think, wow, I have to do, for example, rock bottom squats, or I won't see the muscle size and definition that I'm looking for. So in order, again, to prevent injury, we have to watch our client. If let's say he comes in with a foot problem, that foot problem can cause the hip flexor, which is, you know, the muscle right next to the groin, to become what's called hypertonic, means it's flexing all the time, it's contracted all the time. And that can lead to a back problem or a knee problem. So you see that when we talk about the kinetic chain, if something hurts somewhere in your client's body, then it can eventually cause an injury in another area. So watch them walk, look at their posture, and make sure that you're training muscles specifically according to the balance in their body. Tight muscles can't work in all planes. And what'll happen, for example, is if your client's abs are weak, then the back, the client's back has to work harder eccentrically. Kind of an interesting example of this is the sit and reach test. And I don't know if you all had to do that in high school, but you sit down and your legs are extended in front of you, and you have your hands reaching toward your toes and you're reaching as far as you can toward your toes. Well, we call that a flexibility test, but it's also a strength test. It's the strength of your abdominals to get your hands to be toward your toes. And sometimes if your abs are not strong enough, your back muscles have to eccentrically contract to support your abs, which can again lead to back issues. So sometimes also along those lines, we used to tell clients to stretch before working out. Well, that's not true. Research shows that if, let's say, you stretch before a weight training workout, then you could possibly pull those actin and myosin filaments, those actin and myosin muscle fibers, far enough apart that they won't get enough cross-bridging, meaning a good contracting muscle, to finish their workout effectively. They won't be able to lift as much weight. So the consensus now is do not do stretching before the workout. Warm up before the workout. Do the workout and then stretch after. So let's look at the abs a little bit. We have a great machine at the college. It's a Cybex abdominal machine where it works exactly the way your abdominals are supposed to work. I mean, you know, when we do crunches from the floor, it's not exactly how our abs were designed to work. Our abs were designed to prevent spinal extension. So the machine at the college, what it does is when the weight comes back at you and you're holding your arm straight out in front of you, you're actually decelerating the weight and preventing your spine from extending by using your abdominal muscles to contract. So it's an excellent exercise. So, you know, consider sometimes other exercises for your abs and your clients' abs instead of crunches. If they have any disc problems, or if they have any problems with you know, lower back issues especially, then consider moves like planking or the move I was discussing with our Cybex machine to prevent any type of injury, especially chronic over a long period. So when your client comes in, you could use a postural screen. You know, how does your client look? I mean, you know, you're not a doctor, but just looking with a watchful eye, you know, are her shoulder blades retracted, or does she have round shoulders? Is her head forward, or is she in perfect spinal alignment? Is it an anterior or a posterior pelvic tilt? And keep an eye on that, because if you make a strong muscle stronger and it's pulling her out of alignment and those weak muscles stay weak, then you're not doing her any good at all. So again, be aware of posture before you try to take her to the next level. For example, like look at the squat exercise, which I think that's one that we will test you on at the end of the program. You know, make sure that you know how to take your client through a squat. And a lot of things can go wrong during a squat. As I mentioned earlier, from a neutral spine to a posterior pelvic tilt, if she has a high arch, her knee could go varus, which means it kind of pokes sideways laterally, you know, on the frontal plane. Or if she has flat foot, the knee could go valgus, which means it goes medial, meaning it kind of caves inward. And I see that a lot with women where, you know, she's doing fine on her first few reps, but then as she gets toward her ninth and tenth, her knees kind of cave in toward each other. And so we have to prevent that, because that can lead to dramatic injuries of the knee. And women are definitely more predisposed to ACL injuries than men, so we have to prevent it. We also have to prevent it by teaching them how to land correctly when they jump, and all kinds of issues like that. So be aware of muscle imbalances, and as we discussed with the quads and hamstring, you know, that can prevent an ACL injury, if making sure the hamstring is at least 60% as strong as the quads. So the greatest predictor of injury, and this is kind of common sense, is if your client has been injured before, or let's say they're nursing an injury at the moment. So again, beware of them trying to work out around an injury. The client's goal may not be all that she needs to do. She may just want to work her legs and hips. A guy may just want to work his biceps and chest. And you've seen it. We've all seen it. The guy with no, you know, skinny legs, and he has rounded shoulders, and all he has is biceps and chest. And the women who decide not to train their core and upper body, and they have the legs with definition, but if she'd have done it correctly, then her waistline would appear smaller because the shoulders and back would then create a more symmetrical pose. So again, you know, help your client by teaching them correctly, and then she'll revise her goals. So be sure that the strong muscles don't compensate for the weak ones. Make sure that your client is stable in all of their movements. For example, think about if you're on ice. You know, those of you who live up north, if you're trying to walk on ice, and you know, you're not going to be relaxed. You're gonna be, you know, feeling like you're gonna fall, and you'll be nervous and you'll be tense. And you want your client to be stable, and stability comes with balance of muscle groups, especially when you're working with older adult clients. And you know, we will find a way to get to the refrigerator, and this is what I mean by compensation. If you have an injury, and you know, I had something the other day, and I can't remember what it was, but I remember thinking about this lecture, because sure enough, I'm going to get to the refrigerator no matter what. And we will. We will compensate. We will find a way to do what we need to do, regardless if we're injuring ourselves on the way. Those of you who have already probably heard of this itis, which has a muscular root, it pretty much, when we talk about something like patellar tendonitis, or you know, means, you know, kind of an inflammation of that area. So you know, we could cause injury to a client if, for example, which I just mentioned, patellar tendonitis. Let's say you're teaching an indoor cycling class and your client's seat is too low and she's pedaling with too heavy of resistance, then you could actually cause your client to develop patellar tendonitis. Or she does heavy squats and her knees are traveling way over her toes. So that's why we always have to be watching every second for our client's form. And, you know, that's what they want us to do. You know, she might have a muscle that's tight, like, well, I should say this would be a male, like a psoas, the iliopsoas, the hip flexor muscle. And if that muscle's tight, then the antagonist, which is the glute, will become weak. And it's a scary process where you don't even realize that it's happening. And pretty soon, there's no strength in the glutes. And the glutes are really part of your core. And you've got to keep your glutes strong. So a simple tight muscle can cause a weak muscle in the antagonist. And some of your clients may develop what's called plantar fasciitis, which is a foot problem. And that can overwork the hip flexor, as I said earlier. It can cause the iliopsoas, the hip flexor, to become hypertonic, meaning just contracting all the time. So it's again, it's this balancing act that we have to pay attention to and be able to just see if our client is limping or if they're favoring a different body part. So make sure your client's progression is correct, meaning, you know, she starts slow, progress gradually, slow to fast, simple to complex, static to dynamic, correct execution to increased intensity, and again, body weight before external weight. You know, prepare the body for what you're going to ask it to do. You know, some people have to visit a chiropractor every week because their muscles aren't holding. You know, they need to get you know, manipulated every week, when in fact, if the muscles were doing the job, then they wouldn't need to be fixed every week. So, you know, think about some of the functional workouts your clients can do. You know, martial arts, dance, something that requires a variety of different muscle groups moved to different angles. And, you know, keeping those clients flexible and strong. And we actually term it flexible strength. So remember, give your clients the proper program that they have enough rest time between days off. And remember this, that no muscle works alone to produce movement. So let's say you have your client on a split routine. So you're doing chest one day, shoulders the next, arms the next. Well, they're using their arms on both the chest and the shoulder day. So again, beware of splitting the muscle groups up in that type of fashion. Be trying to remember that you could do one way that I like to train clients. I have them do supersets. So they would do a chest exercise and then a back exercise, and it would they would do them back to back. This is especially valuable for clients who hate to sit around and wait for their muscles to recover. So if they train their chest and then they work their back, while they're training their back, the chest is recovering, you know, not fully, but it gives those athletic clients time to be working out the whole time so that they don't have to be sitting around in the gym. And then there's other of your clients that love that socialization from 1 to 3 minutes, which is fine between straight sets, which again, it just depends on what your client wants to do. So beware again of the antagonists, and by that I mean, if your female client wants to work her calves, make sure she works her tibialis anterior as well. So if she works the back of her lower leg, she should work the front of her lower leg. Work the quads and the hamstring, the abs and the quadratus lumborum, which is the lower back. The chest and the back. You know, just, again, be cognizant of all the different antagonist muscles so that you're going to prevent injury by not overtraining one and the other side is weak. So, you know, rotator cuff muscles, everybody always talks about that, you know, preventing injury. But you've got to train those muscles in balance too. And remember, in the videos you'll see that training the rotator cuff, internal and external rotation, train both in both directions for your client. All right, so we're coming down to the end. Remember, look where your client is most vulnerable and be able to strengthen the muscles that are weak. And if she has any issues with a tight muscle, then train the antagonist to make sure that that antagonist doesn't become weak, because many times the antagonist to a tight muscle is a weak muscle. And finally, this is kind of a favorite topic of mine, you know, just talking about bracing, and you've probably seen me running around in those Vibram shoes. And I wear those because they provide very little to no support for your feet. And I love that because the muscles in my feet have to be activated all the time. But when you're in shoes, it's kind of like a brace. Kind of like wearing a weightlifting belt all the time on all of your exercises. Not a good idea. Because you want your core to be activated during every exercise. Admittedly, some folks will wear a weight belt when they're doing an extremely heavy lift. But personally, I've thrown my weight belts away and I won't even try a lift that's too heavy for me to get it without a weight belt, because I want my core to be able to support any type of move that I'm attempting. So when it comes to orthotics and weight belts and braces, again, we're not medical doctors, but we want to be strong and flexible, and we want to maintain proprioception, which means balance. And if we're wearing all kinds of braces and big heavy shoes with all kinds of support, when do the muscles in our feet, when are they able to make use of balance and strength like they should? Okay, that's enough. And thank you again for joining us. We'll see you on the next lecture.